Welcome to today's episode of Positively Geared. Good to see you, Lloyd.
Hi, Alex. Good to be with you again.
We've got a very special guest here in the studio with us today, Steve Brossman. He's written three Amazon best-selling books and is author of the upcoming book, Your Personal Enterprise. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, guys. Great to be here.
Hey, Steve. How are you going?
Fantastic.
So, Steve, we're really excited to have you today. I know that you've, you bring a wealth of experience in the business world. Your latest book, which I had the pleasure of having a brief read through, covers a lot of the personal aspects in terms of defining your why, building a life of purpose. We're going to spend a lot of time speaking about all those things today. What I really like about you and your writing is that there's a lot of parallels with Lloyd's book, Positively Geared. So we're obviously going to dive into those today. Tell us a little bit about your story. For those who are listening for the first time to you?
Well, I actually never really meant to get into business, and you could say I fell into it by accident. I was a professional sprinter who had a job, and I crushed three discs in my back training for the Olympics, and you can't run very fast with a bad back, so that was that. But I fell in love with the fitness industry through my rehabilitation, and I thought, damn, I love this. And it was through that that I actually said, I can do this, and opened up my own health club. And, you know, I guess a lot of people get into business and you put the sign up and you think, well, okay, the people are going to come. They didn't. Well, not as many as I wanted. So I thought I better learn some marketing. And I bought my first marketing course and I just fell in love with marketing. And from that, I opened up and I set up a kids club and franchised that into five countries and a weight loss program into two. And just really went down that journey of creating programs and through a variety of other businesses, became quite successful, invented an environmental product and sold 4 million of those into 26 countries. And using all of those principles over the last 12 years, I've been able to help other businesses, really help them define their unique authority positioning, their why, and then help get them out there. And through a background of over 20 years in and out of television, I've been able to capitalize and help people get in front of the camera and currently now use videos to project themselves out there. So that's the short of where I've come to now. And with everything that's going on, there needs to be a change. And people need to be personally accountable for themselves, whether they're in business, whether they're fully employed. So that's where your personal enterprise has come in. And we'll get into that a little bit later. It's how to run your own self as your own business, and then how to accelerate that and really achieve some fantastic goals.
So, Steve, I guess looking back to your very first business, a lot of the times what we usually don't know what we don't know. So when you started your first business, what were your biggest struggles? Looking back, you said marketing, but apart from that, what were the other things? Because usually when you're a sole trader business owner for the first time, you have to wear so many hats. You've got to be the accountant, you've got to be the CEO, you basically got to be everything.
Well, I was quite fortunate that I went into business with my sister. And she came from a banking background. So I left all the boring paperwork and everything to her. And I was just the creative guy who went across and did all those sorts of things. And she just mopped up the mess behind me. So that was a great partnership there. But you're right. You go into business because you have a passion for doing what you like doing. But then once you get into it, you realize there are so many other aspects around it. And fall in love with marketing and promotion was one of the big things that I didn't really know enough about. And most people don't these days. And you've both seen it in all the industries that you're in. Most businesses get to a point by being good and getting better at what they do. But then there's a ceiling. And how do they break through that ceiling? It is by getting better skills or getting better people around them. And there was a lot of things that I didn't know. I've got a philosophy. If you don't know something, go to the best, pay for it and learn from them. And that's what I've done all the way through my own career.
Absolutely. And did you ever find it hard or confronting having to sort of put yourself out there? Because when you market yourself, you're kind of basically saying, yes, I'm the go-to person, come to me and everything like that. Did you find that, a little bit difficult at first?
A lot of people, and I've been very fortunate, I've been blessed to be able to, I've spoken in 15 countries to over 80,000 people. And a lot of people say, oh, Steve, you're a born speaker. Going through primary school, I couldn't even read five lines in public. And I got embarrassed one day. We were doing a rehearsal ceremony. And I even stuffed up reading my five lines that bad that the principal walked across the stage, snatched the paper out of my hand and said, I'm going to give it to the girl to read. And I thought, damn. And then I got into debating and absolutely stuffed that up as well. So it wasn't a really good entree into a speaking career, but I stuck at it and I stuck at it. And I realized that I just had to master being able to get out and speak in public. And then when I did leave school and I was a fairly successful athlete, I was interviewed on TV quite a bit, and I've still got some recordings of those, and I just shuddered. I was disgusting. I had no engagement whatsoever. I couldn't look at the camera. But I knew that when I opened the doors of the health club, I had to change. So I would book myself out to do a talk at least once a month. I would go to Rotary clubs. I'd go, and I just had to get out and do that. And yeah, we talk about later, when your why is big enough, you push yourself through and do the things that you wouldn't normally do. And my why was keeping the doors open. So I had to get better at putting myself out there and speaking to people. So it wasn't easy.
Lloyd, what I think is one of the big parallels between Steve's work and a lot of the stuff that we talk about on our podcast and in your book, Positively Geared, I mean, everything comes back to strategy and knowing your why.
Oh, absolutely, Alex. And, you know, in my book, I mean, the very first chapter, chapter one, is know your why. Because from my perspective and what I do, you know, a lot of people will going and buying a property and think that's going to work for them. But for me, it really has nothing to do with that to start with, because property itself is just the vehicle. And whether you're using property, whether you're using the stock market, whether you're using gold or oil, they're just vehicles. It's really knowing your why, what you're trying to achieve. You know, what are your goals in life? You know, is it financial independence? What sort of lifestyle choices you want in the future? And then crafting a strategy around that to be able to achieve those goals. But you really need to know your why first, and that's very big. And then talking about property and things comes a bit after that. So I think there's definitely a lot of synergies there between what I do and what Steve does.
I think, guys, you know, as we grow up, you know, there's so many social constructs. I think for a lot of people, it's almost a rite of passage that you grow up. Some will go on to study. Some will go on to take on apprenticeships. Then you start a family. You invest in property, whether it be a primary residence or to invest, which, you know, we talk a lot about, Lloyd. Steve, when we were just talking off air before we came on, you know, we said, if there's one thing that people can take away from your work or your latest work, what would it be? And it's just having real clarity around why you do what you do or what the purpose behind your goals. How do people find that? Because I think that's the hardest thing for a lot of people. They don't actually know what they want.
Yeah, one of the biggest things is clarity. And in my business presentations, I always have a slide in there that says clarity equals cash. And when you are clear about, you know, who you are, what you want, then you can actually take the next step. Most people don't have clarity. They may have, you know, their New Year's resolutions. It's basically a wish list. And I would love this and I would love that, but it's not broken down. And just like yours, in the first chapter of my book, we do start talking about the why. And I've broken that down into four parts, which is be more, have more, give more, play more. What are those areas there? And we actually start with the have more. A lot of people say, I want this, as want extra this, whether it's extra money, freedom, time off. So that's the have more. And then ideally, when you have more, you can give more, whether it's time, money, and resources, and play more. Quite often we forget to play. So they're those three things. But then you've got to go back to the top. And it's like, who do I have to become? And that's the thing that's missing. Who do I have to become to achieve my goals? And at the beginning of every year and every financial year, every time that I'm setting new goals, and then I write down, who do I have to become to achieve that? And that's one of the things, that's the secret to achieving great success and great goals, is realizing that you have to become somebody, and who you are now is not going to get there.
To build on that, Steve, everyone, as you mentioned, you know, they set New Year's resolutions. What do they say after 2 or 3 months? They've thrown the paper out and they're pretty much back to their old ways. Extreme ownership is a great vehicle to ensure that you don't repeat the same behavioral patterns, which is taking ownership of where you're at, what hasn't worked, and then working on building upon that. Is there anything else you can add to that in terms of helping people stick to their why and their purpose?
One of the things that I put in my last book, Exceed, and I've got the same six principles in here as well, is most people will set a big long-term goal. And it might be out of their reach, and it's not totally believable. There's a saying that what you truly believe, you will succeed and you will achieve. But most people don't truly believe their big goals. Therefore, they don't truly put in the effort that's required to do it. And therefore, they'll always fall short. And as soon as they start falling behind, then they'll say, well, that's it. It's not going to happen again. Whereas what I suggest with people to do is set momentum goals. One that's tough, but it's achievable. But when you achieve it, you'll smash through towards the next goal and then towards the next goal and maintaining momentum. And when you get that winning feeling, you start developing, like all animals and all humans, when we have a win, we actually have a surge of dopamine and testosterone to get ready for the next big kill. That's just the way we're built. So when you develop your winning feeling and you have that as a winning habit, you're going to be stronger and smarter and brighter and ready for the next one and then ready for the next one. That's the biggest thing that people can do with their goal setting. What are the momentum goals that I'm going to achieve that creates a win, that creates momentum on towards the next goal? And that's one of the things that people, when they set New Year's resolutions, they don't set the right resolution and they don't set the momentum goals in between.
Yeah, Steve, I really like your philosophy on momentum goals. I guess for me, I tend to call them short-term, medium-term and long-term goals, but I really like your analogy of momentum goals. But what I find with a lot of people who come to me is that they have these big outlandish goals that, as you say, are not realistic. They might want to invest in property for 5 years and be able to achieve a passive income of $300,000 or be able to buy that $5 billion house within 5 years, and they haven't even started investing yet. So you do need to have those more realistic goals that you actually can attain, that are attainable, and then work up there. And I think if people can actually have those, like you call them, momentum goals, achieve them, it gives people that dopamine, that confidence to be able to then move to the next goal. And then their overall goals, I guess they seem more attainable and they can attain them if they can see the smaller goals being achieved in the medium term.
Steve, what Lloyd and I have identified is that sometimes when people are building a portfolio of properties and they've got a final destination as to where they want to get to in terms of whether it's overall wealth, amount of properties, passive income, so on and so forth, there will be times where they've basically got to take a step back to take a giant leap forward. What I mean by that is, you know, they might have a property that's not performing well or it's not allowing them to borrow more to get into the next property. I suppose the same thing happens when people do set goals. They might have a good framework, they might follow all the right steps, and it just doesn't quite come off for them. How do you typically work with people through that sort of stuff?
Great point. And that does happen all the time. And the point after setting momentum goals is actually do more than is expected. And that gives you a buffer. Well, let's just say I want to run a marathon. And to run a marathon, I need to do a certain amount of training. One of the best things that you can do is actually just exceed what you're supposed to do each day. So you've got that buffer. And when something happens, whether you've got people around you or you're further down the track, you've got that buffer to be able to absorb that and go through. But you also need to look at things do happen. Like, I was a professional track athlete and I tore my hamstring 6 times. It happened. But you got to know that, well, I know it's going to heal. I know I'm going to get back on the track and I know I'm going to run well again. So whatever it is, you've got to have the confidence that you can get back on the horse. You've got to have the confidence that whatever the property is doing, it will turn around, or you have the resources and the knowledge or the people around you that will work it out. Or if it's not going to, you take an alternate route. A lot of people in the COVID times are talking about pivoting. I hate the word pivot because that's a stationary, pivoting around a stationary point. To me, it's all about maintaining momentum and being agile. And when you've got the momentum going, and if a property like that, and you are investing in property, and one of them doesn't happen to perform, you've still got the momentum to absorb what's happening over here and then get back on track. Long-term goals should always be fluid. They shouldn't always be set in stone, because we don't know what's around the corner. And it's being able to adapt and make the best of what we've got. But the key to all of it is maintaining momentum.
How important is it, talking about fluidity, to be pragmatic when goal setting, in the sense that things do change? Obviously, as people grow through life, you know, you go through your 20s, 30s and 40s. I think part of getting clarity is that what you do want in life does change. I mean, have you seen that your wants and needs have changed over the years?
I'm still wondering what I'm going to be when I grow up.
I've always been like that myself, actually.
I do believe in a long-term future and a vision for how you want things to turn out. But as we know, with what's happened in the last 6 months, we can't predict that. And we do have to be agile, and we do have to revise those goals. And you know, when you do the long-term goal setting, then you've also got to bring it back as to, what do I need to do today? And sometimes your days change. So you've got to adapt to that as well. And the biggest thing of all, and you know, with the property investing, Lloyd, you've got to enjoy the journey. It's like, I'm going to be happy when? No, be happy today. And enjoy the journey and make sure that that is all a part of it. That's why I've got play as a part of the 4 big things that we need to do. Enjoy the journey.
Absolutely. And I think that's a big key of what I always say to people is you have to enjoy the journey. You don't suddenly enjoy life in 10 years' time or 15 years' time because you've bought a house or you bought that so-called dream house. You know, you enjoy the journey now. And the other point you raise, which is really good, is that you do need to be fluid with your goals. And you know, with the current times that we're having at the moment, I know that, you know, it's made it more difficult, for example, for some people to perhaps buy the properties that they wanted to buy. But at the end of the day, people just need to really look at what they need to do. So for myself, I have been working with people, helping them to understand their why and what their goals are and how we can get through, you know, the current climate over the next few months. And I guess what the strategy will look like moving forward based in the current times, and especially with the way, you know, banks work differently and their goalposts change all the time. So you do need to be flexible. And I'm sure, you know, you'd know this too, Alex, from the stuff that you do, that you do need to be flexible all the time. But as long as your goal's in place and that you are always aiming for something and enjoying that journey, then I think that's the main thing.
Steve, you mentioned before, I suppose, just talking about the current climate we're in with COVID-19, there's a lot of white noise out there at the moment. There's a lot of distraction that sometimes pulls people off track when they're working towards long to medium term goals. How do you suggest to your customer base that they deal with white noise? And you know, obviously, we don't have a global pandemic every 3 years. This is uncharted territory for everybody. There's a lot of learnings that we can take from this experience. I know a lot of businesses, it's a great time to have a health check on how they operate. Are their processes the best? Have they got the right people in the right roles? Are they overstaffed? Do they need the big office in the city? How do you sort of help people filter through the white noise and make sure that they're working towards the end goal?
Great question. The biggest thing is to take the blinkers off, because what you did before this happened is not going to work now and is not going to work in the future. I'm working with all of my people at looking at what are the new needs of the people out there, and how can you adapt, and how can you be one of the first group of people to be able to service other people's new needs. And a very quick example is, as we were going through, everybody was being told to pivot and go online. And a couple of colleagues of mine are digital marketers, and they say that all we're doing now is just building, you know, websites and platforms and everything to start selling their things online. Videos is one of the greatest things for people to use when they pivot and go online, which is my background and forte. And so, well, there's a new need out there. People have to really quickly learn, you know, who they are going to be online and how they can use videos, how they can confidently get in front of the camera. So within 3 weeks, I built a program, marketed it and launched it, and had people from 6 countries doing it. That wasn't a desperate need 3 months before that. It's a matter of, okay, keep the eyes open for opportunities and be able to adapt and then service those needs. I see a lot of people that are complaining about what's going on instead of saying, wow, look at all of these new opportunities. I'm getting lots of people that are coming to me and saying, Steve, I've got a successful job, but I really like working from home now. I don't want to go ever back to the office. What do I do? And so what we're doing with those is, you know, creating their authority positioning, helping take their skills, turn it into a pack or a program, and then having them become their own personal enterprise and get out there. So there are so many opportunities. And I think they said in the Great Depression in America, there was more multi-million dollar companies formed back then than at any time in American history. And it's all a matter of, there are new needs, and you've got to keep your eyes open and take the blinkers off.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100% correct. Couldn't agree more with that. It's all about taking those blinkers off and adapting to the needs. I mean, I should have bought shares in Zoom a couple of years ago, because everybody's using Zoom now.
So, or Afterpay.
Yeah, right, absolutely. Yeah, that too.
Steve, you mentioned the term authority positioning. Can you develop a bit more upon what that exactly means for those listening?
Yeah, I'm going to take a step back and talk about what I call the brown box syndrome.
Sure.
and Lloyd, you'll appreciate this term. There are so many people out there that are basically titled by their category or occupation, you know, whether they're a mortgage broker or a buyer's agent or a financial planner, and all of those sorts of people, a coach or a trainer. They're a brown box. People don't know how good you are until they get to the box, open it, and unwrap what's in it. You know, you look at the Christmas tree of Christmas Day, all of these beautiful boxes there in one brown box. Guess what's going to be the last one unwrapped? And people look at it and think, well, A, I've seen what's in brown boxes before. It's not that nice. And B, well, whoever put the box there didn't make any effort to make that box look nice. And that's the same as us in business. We need to be uniquely positioned. People don't buy who you are and what you do. They buy the outcomes that you deliver for them. So if you can be titled by your outcome and work with people on those sorts of things, then you stand out. And then people look at you and say, wow, you're different. You put the work in, you do stand out. That was the title of my first book, actually. Stand up, stand out, or stand aside. I'll share with you, I had a burning desire to call it Be Different or Bugger Off. But my wife, the Amazon guru, wouldn't let me do that. But anyhow, and that's what it is that you have to do, because people want to do business they know, like, and trust. And if you're an authority and you put information out there, whether it's videos, books, or speaking, then they will gravitate towards you. And Forbes last year said that being an authority now is a crucial form of marketing, because there is so much noise out there and people need to be positioned as a unique authority on the way they deliver their services and their outcomes.
That's, I mean, that's so true. And so many businesses, and whether they're, you know, like you say, sole personal enterprises or larger companies, don't really get that, because taking from in my field, for example, being a buyer's agent isn't really what I do. It's the end goal that people are wanting to achieve. So if people ask me what I do, it's actually creating lifestyle choices for people, for example, and creating equity that's going to allow them to achieve their dreams. It's not being a buyer's agent.
One great example, a guy I worked with a little while ago, and he said, Steve, I'm an insurance broker. And it was basically, well, that's good. I don't really want to talk to you, and not many people ever do. And he said, I stand up at BNI and all these networking events, and whenever I say I'm an insurance broker and I can help you with your insurance, and it's like, well, nobody comes and talks to me. I said, well, I know why, because they don't want to. And he said, but I'm really passionate about helping protect themselves, protect their lifestyle and their assets in case of some unforeseen circumstances. And I thought, that's what you do, not you're an insurance agent. So we turned him into a lifestyle protection specialist. And whenever he says now, whenever I get up and say I'm a lifestyle protection specialist, I help protect your assets and lifestyle in the case of unforeseen circumstances, he always has people come to them. So getting out of the brown box and being an authority on what you deliver, not what you do, but what you deliver, is crucial.
I think too, guys, in uncertain times, people are naturally drawn towards the leaders in their field. So people are going to want to do business with the ones that they deem to be the authority figure, Steve, in that industry.
Just on that, and I'll take a step sideways on that. And my wife has helped, I think, about 135, 40 people become Amazon best-selling authors. And she was doing a video a little while ago, and she said, Steve, why should people write a book? And without thinking, I just came straight out and said, because most people don't. When you've taken the time to shoot videos and put out there, when you've taken the time to write a book and publish it and put it out there, you are doing things that 99% of the population in business don't do. So you deserve to be seen as an authority and have people gravitate towards you. And that's what it is. And putting videos out there, people get to know, like, and trust you, because they actually see who you are and what you do. They're two key components. Why do it? Of course, most people don't.
Lloyd, I think what separates you from, there's obviously an abundance of buyer's agents. It's a very big field, particularly here in Sydney. A lot of what Steve's mentioned is very much what I think you really excel well in. And I'm not saying this disrespectfully towards anybody, but probably a lot of buyer's agents out there, you walk your talk. You've built a big portfolio of properties. You've made the failures. You've learned from your mistakes. And you've got invaluable advice and experience that you can now pass on to people.
Yeah, that's right, Alex. I mean, I think there's a couple of points there. I mean, one is obviously, I think that you shouldn't take advice from people that really haven't done what you're trying to achieve. So you really should be gravitating around people who have achieved what you're trying to do. So, don't sort of use a buyer's agent who hasn't bought a property, for example. It's not really going to work for you. From my perspective, I've made lots of mistakes along the way, and I share them. I share them readily in my book, and also when I'm talking to clients. I think really from a buyer's agent's perspective, when people come to see me, I quite openly say to them, we're not going to go and buy a property tomorrow. It is about knowing your why and then finding out what they're trying to achieve, what they're hoping to achieve, then setting a strategy on how they can achieve that. Buying the property becomes, later on. So it's a journey, it's a process, and it's a long-term process. Not long-term to buy the one property, because once we set that strategy, we obviously can start the property buying process. And most of my clients are long-term repeat clients because we have that long-term strategy in place, because it's about delivering the outcome of what they want. Now, if they want an outcome of, say, $100,000 passive income, or they want to have an outcome of being able to pay off their home mortgage or be able to put their kids through private school education and things like that, then we work on how to deliver that. And we build a roadmap around that, a blueprint, as Steve calls it, and I might get him to talk about that in a sec. It's all about that roadmap and that journey, and then we can start formulating the actual properties that will allow them to get there.
Tell us about the blueprint, Steve.
The blueprint got me out of a lot of trouble. I was moving from the video guy. You know, I had 20 years in and out of TV and hosted my own TV show and all those sorts of things. And the video guy was only ever going to get me so far. But I was moving into helping people doing what I'm doing now, position themselves as an authority and really help them. But every time I had to explain myself over and over again, and then I'd get to the point of, you know, I'm selling myself. And it was like, well, hey, do you like me? Buy now. Buy me. Hey, I'm good, type of thing. And it was really uncomfortable. I'd invested in going to do some speaker training with a very successful speaker trainer from America. And one of the things that he brought out, I think it was about the end of the first day, he brought out this massive big diagram. This is the scientific approach for selling from stage. And it was just a pictorial schematic of what his process was. And I just fell in love with that. I think I switched off for the rest of the sessions thinking, how can I create my blueprint to better explain who I am, what I do, why I'm different? And that's evolved over a period of time. And it takes the stress off people having to explain themselves. When they have a schematic of who they are, what they do, but more importantly, the outcomes and the benefits that they deliver, and they can walk somebody through and say, here is my blueprint for your success. And then you get to the point at the end, you're actually not selling yourself, you're selling the system. And the number of professionals that are really good at what they do, they collaborate with people, and then they get to the point of, hey, do you want to buy me now? When you take the pressure off them having to sell themselves and it's, hey, look, this is a fantastic system. If we put this system into your business, this is what it would do for you. You're selling the system and people can sell that so much easier. And for everybody now that I work with, we create their positioning, we create their packages and programs, but then we create a blueprint that clearly explains, and it is a tool to collaborate on. And at the end of the conversation, they could see it in front of them and say, that is what I want. And it makes it so much easier.
Steve, I think that's great. But I think that's also good for businesses as they're scaling. I think as a solopreneur or a sole trader can sit there with a client and explain what they do. And if they are trustworthy and the client can see that, they may buy that. But when you're growing a business and you've got other people trying to sell product, you actually need that blueprint in place so other people can sell the system. Because if you've got a staff of 5, 10, 20 people, as a business owner, you can't be the one person who's doing everything all the time. You need a system in place so other people can actually, you know, other staff members can sell the system because everybody's getting the same deliverables and same outcome.
And I mean, even strictly speaking in that sense, you know, that's very much an external system. This is the blueprint or the schematic. If I've understood correctly, Steve, this is what we do, how we do it. These are the outcomes we can provide to you, but also systems on an internal level. So if you're scaling a business, Lloyd, and you've gone from 2 staff members to 10 or 10 to 20, you know, it's really important that everyone's got clearly defined roles within the business as to what do they do on a daily basis. That way you're getting the most out of your staff and also helping them reach their own personal goals.
Yeah, it helps with consistency. And in particular, when you're out there talking about your business and how it works. And I worked with one guy to create a blueprint for helping him sell the work that he was doing for the company. He was just basically a hired salesperson. And so we created the blueprint for him. And it wasn't small terms. I mean, I've still got it on my phone. It was as a message and say, Steve, I used the blueprint for the first time on a phone call and got the go-ahead for $500,000 a month deal. And he was selling finance, et cetera. So it does create consistency. And another company came in and they said, we have trouble with our salespeople explaining what we did. And that's because it was verbal and they just kept talking. Whereas visual, people can absorb an image much quicker than they can verbally. So there are so many aspects to having a blueprint to be able to use in the whole system.
I think the other two things, Steve, is understanding what the client's actually trying to achieve. And I know we've sort of briefly touched on this, but I've seen a lot of people in business that they're so excited, particularly in sales-based industries, they're so excited to pitch their services and, you know, Steve, we're going to do this and we're the best at that. And, you know, Lloyd, we'll help you find the best property and, you know, we can get you a better price. We outbid every other person at auction, but you're not actually understanding what the client's trying to achieve. And that's a big asterisk.
you had one brilliant word in there, and that was understand. And I've had a number of people come to me and they say, but they don't understand what I do. And I said, well, they don't have to. There's two understands. They have to understand that you understand them. That's the first. And they also have to understand how what you does benefits them in their lifestyle or their business. And they're the two understands. And I talk about the three P's in their language. There's the purpose, the process, and the payoff. The purpose is why they're there in the first place. What are their pains, their needs, their goals, their wants, their dreams? The process is the stuff that you do and how you do it. And that's what everybody's excited about. I just want to talk about what I do. I really want them to know what I do. And everybody's eyes glaze over. I don't care what you do. It's the last P that I'm really concerned about, and that's the payoff. Yeah, it's how you do and how you deliver it to me. And there was a Michigan university said, people don't pay for what you do. They pay for how they feel before, during, and after doing business with you. And if they feel absolutely awesome with the deliverables, the payoffs, I don't really care whether it takes you 5 minutes, 5 hours, or 5 days to deliver what it is. I'm just paying for you to pay for my payoff. And that's where people, you know, as you were saying, people get stuck. It's like, well, they get stuck talking about what I like doing.
Yeah, they're trying to give the farm away and, you know, oversell themselves too much.
And some people get stuck then on trying to work out what the hourly rate is and, you know, is your fee worth it? And, you know, how much is that work per hour? And at the end of the day, if you can sell your services properly, if you've got the system in place, people understand all that and what you're delivering on, then the fee is delivers on that. And as Steve said, whether it takes 5 minutes, you know, 5 days or a week or whatever, you're getting delivered on that for that fee.
Steve, you can probably, well, Lloyd and Steve can probably build on this, but I think, you know, in business and life, to get better outcomes, you've got to ask better questions.
Quite often, it's better questions of yourself. And it always starts with you. If you're not getting the outcome, what do you have to change about yourself? What questions do you have to ask about yourself? And it's not the cookie cutter typical questioning that most sales trainers would go through. It's really understanding. A lot of people say you don't sell on the features, you sell on the benefits. And I go one step further. You don't sell on the benefits, you sell on the benefits behind the benefits. Like a guy or a girl doesn't want to go to the gym to lose 7 kilos, but they'll go in and say, listen, I need to lose 7 kilos. Can I help you? And they say, yeah, we can help you with that. Well, you're the same as every other gym. Well, yeah, how is that affecting you? What's it doing right now? You're really understanding their wants. Yeah, well, I want to lose the 7 kilos so that I can get back into my jeans and I can have more energy. Great. Okay. So how will you feel when you do that? Well, I'm going to feel fantastic because I'm going to my class reunion in 6 months' time and I want to look damn hot. You sell on looking damn hot for the reunion. You don't sell on the seven kilos.
Yep.
You don't just wake up and say, oh, I've got to lose 7 kilos today. And it's like, no, it's the why. And that's what we've been talking about all the time. It's the why. And most people don't ask enough questions to uncover the why. They'll just find out the needs.
That's spot on. And I think, yeah, going a step further than that, I often find that clients come to me and they don't really know what they want. They might say, yeah, I want to have financial freedom through property, or I just want to grow a property portfolio. Well, property portfolio is useless unless you know what it's going to achieve for you. I mean, what do you want, 10, 20, 100 properties?
Mm.
It's useless. For me, I start asking a lot of questions, and it's really about what you want to achieve. That gets people thinking more and even getting them to put it down on paper. You know, do you have kids? Do you want to pay for the education? Do you want to be able to afford to have an annual family holiday without worrying about where that money's going to come from? Do you have a home mortgage, or would you like to own your own home or your own dream home and be able to pay that off? Having all those things in place and having people actually think about what they really want to achieve and what their real why is in life takes it that step further, because you really get people thinking. You're actually asking questions that people would haven't even thought of themselves, and that really gets them moving in that right direction.
And it definitely helps, as Steve mentions, getting real clarity around what you want to do. I mean, there's been many times I've had customers approach me and say, oh, Alex, you know, we're looking to buy here. Okay, well, why do you want to buy there? Why is that important to you? You know, have you considered the long-term effects of that? And all of a sudden people, they go, oh, we don't actually know why. And it's digging deeper, and it really helps give people clarity. And it's a great skill set to be able to bring that out in people, because a lot of people don't have the ability to do that.
So it's like people buying an investment property and wanting to buy it near where they live just because they think they know the suburb.
Yeah, because it's around the corner. Yeah. Steve, we haven't touched on this yet, but you actually had the great experience, I'd imagine, of spending some time with Richard Branson on Necker Island.
That was a great experience. It really was. We were invited to a high-level mastermind group, and it was on Necker with Sir Richard. And as I was chatting to Lloydie earlier, it just happened to be one of those weeks. He'd actually just come back from seeing his new children, and his wife was still there with the new twins. And he was lost. And well, he had spare time on his hands, so he actually spent a lot more time than was bargained for. And I was fortunate enough on the first morning to have a one-on-one breakfast, 45 minutes with Sir Richard. Various times throughout the week, there was times where we caught up with each other and we chatted. And there were some phenomenal learnings that I got from that guy that most people don't see or hear. And one of the things that I learned on the first morning, that when he's with you, he is 100% with you. And it was almost embarrassing that he was asking questions, almost trying to learn from me. And I'm just thinking, hang on.
This doesn't feel right.
I'm sitting here with you and he was, yeah, we were just talking about everything. We're talking about bikes and bike crashes and business and all of those sorts of things. And to let you know that he's on the island, he's got 20 odd people there, many of whom he didn't really know. He was looking after us. He was managing 300 companies as well as other things going on. And 4 days later, we're on his new island where his new house was being built, and we're having lunch there. And lots of the people were out there on the in the pools and doing all sorts of stuff. And he just come and put his hand on my shoulder and sat on the table and said, "Hey, Steve, with all of your sporting background, how come you're not out there doing that?" And I just looked at him and I thought, A, you remembered my name. B, you remembered the conversation, and you just came up and just sat down as if
best mates. Yeah.
we're having stuff, and you know, things that were happening on that I watched one of the big Galapagos turtles, you know, lay eggs, and I videoed it for him. And so we formed a great bond and friendship on the island, got to know the man behind the man, which was really inspiring to get to know him.
One of the first business books I bought, Steve, was Screw It, Let's Do It by Sir Richard. And, you know, that really goes through his story from a really young age to where he is today, or at least at that time. Lloyd, I know you have a similar experience starting your family pizza business from home when you were quite young.
Yeah, I think I was about 8 years old, but I don't think it was quite as successful a business at the time.
What do you think were your best learnings, Steve, from your time with Sir Richard?
One of the interesting things, and in my new book, I talk about creating your own personal operating system, how you live each day, how you perform, and what's your driving force. And I got to see firsthand Richard's personal operating system. And most ultra-successful professionals have their own personal operating system. And he's quite rigid. He's up at 6 o'clock. He has a tennis match. And he set a rule for us that if you work in the morning, you are not allowed to work in the afternoon. So if we had a mastermind in the morning, there had to be activities in the afternoon and vice versa. And he lives by that. The way that he operates is very effective. He's relatively dyslexic. So for him to read things, it doesn't work. He would sit in a very comfortable chair or a hammock and have two secretaries, assistants, read out emails, letters, proposals to him. And then he would make a decision and tell them what to do. So basically, his productivity was phenomenal. He was basically tapping into his brain and only doing what he had to do, which was make decisions on information that he got. And then the rest of the time was basically enjoying and running his charity and doing those sorts of things that he loved, which was where I started formulating the be more, have more, give more, play more, because basically that's a lot of what he does in his. And I thought, well, look, if him and a lot of other high-level professionals could do that, that's something that I'm going to try and help other people do as well.
Just going back to the personal operating system that you touched on and drawing some of the experience you had with Sir Richard Branson on Necker Island. Lloyd, I know that we've spoken about this too, the importance of having a framework for your day almost and daily habits and rituals which sort of set you up to succeed within the day. Can you talk to us more about that, Steve?
Yeah, look, as a professional athlete, as I left school, there were things that I just had to do and to get to the top. And I've taken that into business. As a competitive athlete, I've taken it into business. And there's a little sign that I have is, yeah, every day I go to work, I compete. Well, basically, it's against myself. How can I be better at what I do? And I can't be better if I get up one day and thinking, what am I going to do today? And a lot of people have a personal operating system, but it's by default. It's like, well, they get up and let other people tell them how they're going to absorb. They're going to get up and, you know, check social media and they'll see a post that really aggravates them. the next couple of hours is just gone.
So, that's the tone for the day.
Yeah, and that's it. So when you take control of your emotions, you take control of your energy, you take control of your time, then you take control of your life. So there's things that I've put in place that are my non-negotiable first 10 minutes that I do every day to formulate how I'm going to attack the day. And one of the things that most people should do is have that non-negotiable first 10 minutes. And it's a matter of, you know, check myself before I get out of bed. How am I feeling? What am I doing? Yep, I don't hit the floor unless I'm in a positive state of mind. Then what do I do the next bit? Well, because we've been shallow breathing all night, I make sure I do some deep breathing. Because we've been expelling water all night, I make sure that I have a glass of water, rehydrate, and then sit down and journal. And that's the first part of the day. Once I've done that, then everything else starts falling into place, depending on whether it's a cycling day or whether it's a not. Then there are other things that you need to do through the day as to what are you checking in on? How is my performance through the day? One of the things I've actually got in this book is the 10-minute transition, because most people multitask instead of chunking down time. And I read there's a statistic that 30% of people's productivity is moving from one thing to another. I've got the pack up, the get up, the set up, 10 minutes to increase your productivity. When you finish a chunk, a block of work, you pack it up in a way that it is going to be there ready to find, whether you've got files open, put them in a way that you could just one click of the button, you can go back to where they are again. Get up, get out of the chair, go for a walk, have some water, possibly something to eat, and just move. Get back in the chair, and then the setup, find everything that you're going to need for the next 60 minutes or 90 minutes and have it all there. I don't know about you, but I spend too much time looking for that email, looking for that file, looking for that whatever. And when you get into this system, it's all packed up in a nice little box, which could be on your computer.
Not a brown box, I hope.
No, not a brown box. It's a nice bright box. You pack it up in a way that you can just go straight back to it. And that just absolutely smashes your productivity. And that's all part of your operating system. And your operating system goes back to your why. And then when that's strong enough, then you will do the things that you wouldn't have normally done. You'll increase your performance and you'll increase your momentum. And it all fits together in a nice little set of cogs.
Lloyd, I know morning routine is important to you. What does your routine look like loosely, and how do you find that benefits your daily habits and your business?
I'm actually the same as Steve in the sense that I have to have some water when I get out of bed. I'm usually pretty dehydrated anyway. Maybe it's having the aircon on all night or something. But for me, having a jog in the morning, and that quite often involves taking my Boston Terrier for a run with me. And then part of my morning routine is actually having coffee. I have to have a coffee. And that's non-negotiable, probably for lots of reasons. One to wake up maybe, but I enjoy the taste of it. And also sitting down with that and reading the paper, that gets me relaxed, gets my head in the right space. I like what Steve was saying about, you know, checking yourself to make sure you're positive before you get out of bed. So I need to make sure I do that a little bit more often. Yeah, I tend to be pretty positive in the morning, I think, so that's all good. But yeah, doing some exercise, reading the paper, getting in a good frame of mind before you're getting in and checking the emails. The worst thing you can be doing is just getting out of bed and then just checking emails.
Hating the world before you even...
One of the best things I've ever done was turn off email notifications on my phone, because I do have a thing now that I don't check my phone in the evening, so I need to spend time with my family.
That's a great point, checking your emails, checking social media. I've got a rule not to let other people dictate what I feel. Things can happen, people can do things, people can say things. It is my choice how I react. And when you can actually do that, you will control your emotions. And a lot of people say, but doesn't that make you cold? No, it leaves the right amount of emotions for the right people at the right time. I see so many people are controlled by what other people say, do, and think, and they lose all of their emotions out there, and they've got nothing left for themselves, and they've got nothing left for their loved ones. A lot of people that know me closely know that I'm a very passionate person about what I do and my family and those around me, but I don't let anybody steal my emotions.
I really love that, Stephen. To use an analogy, imagine that we all have 20 energy credits for a day, and you know, you're having a tough morning at work, and you know, deal's fallen apart or whatever the case may be, and you've spent 12 of your 20 credits for the day on stuff that really doesn't matter because you've allowed people to control your emotions. And then you get home and the people that love and care about you, you're not actually giving them what they deserve from your time too. So it's really important to be able to channel exactly what you've described. I think that's really good advice. And a great way to look at things in terms of non-reaction.
Well, I believe that almost exactly what you're saying is we should treat our emotional energy the same as our normal energy. And there is a finite amount of emotional energy that you do have. And as an athlete, I've seen people lose races before they get to the starting line because their emotions got to them. And it has a major impact. And that's what I just said. If you control your emotions, you control your energy, you control your energy, you control your time, you control your time, you control your life.
In terms of routine, I'm keen to get both your thoughts too, because I mean, I see this a lot. People will watch a motivational video, they'll read a book. You get that hit for a couple of days where you're ready to conquer the world, and then all of a sudden you go back to bad habits. We see it all the time in society. It's really important, in my view, that people also find what works for them. So, for example, it might not be waking up every day at 4 o'clock and having a cold shower and going for a run. It's not if that's not who you are, you're setting yourself up for further failure, right?
It's also, if that's not who you are, but if you believe that's who you need to become, then you need to take the steps. And that'll only happen if your why is strong enough for you to make the change. And that's the thing. And you do need to find what's good for you and what's going to get you there. It can't be slipping back into old habits. And I agree with you. People that go to, I won't mention any names, a lot of the motivational gurus, and they go to them every year and they go to them 10 times. And I thought, well, why didn't it work the first time? It's because they don't take action. They don't take action is because they don't have clarity around what they want. Why am I watching this motivational video? And they just watch it and expect to absorb it. Whatever you learn or absorb, then you've got to, okay, what are the steps for me to implement it? And it's the implementation, not motivation, that is going to make the difference.
I find that the same with a lot of people who come to me and they've been to property seminars time and time again and actually paid a lot of money for them, but they haven't taken action because they think that maybe attending a property seminar is going to make them wealthy, but they've actually got to take that action. But Alex, getting back to that point, I think that, while maybe getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and going for a run or a bike ride may not work for people, people need to actually, as Steve says, find out what their why is and how they can achieve that. Because on the other hand, it's not going to benefit people if they decide that what works for them is sleeping until 11 o'clock every morning, because then what are they going to do? I mean, unless they're running the business at night or they're working a night shift or something, they need to have that motivation. They need to get up and be positive, get out of bed, have a routine, try to really get everything they can out of their life, but they need to put every effort in.
It's very true. It's a very good point. Guys, something that I want to touch on briefly is, I think we've covered, the why, clarity, routine, setting up good habits to set you up to succeed throughout the day. I want to talk about standards. How important are standards in business and personal life to how you operate?
Crucial. Absolutely crucial. I mean, basically live and die by the sword. If your standards are low in yourself, then that's going to attract people of the same quality. And you might just say, well, okay, I'm going to cut corners here and I'm just going to do this, but I don't want my clients to do that. It's just not going to work. You've got to, A, set yourself the highest possible standards and demand that from people that you hang around and also that you have as clients. And then one of my former mentors, he asked a question in a room. Yeah, how many people here have paid this much for a course, for some training? And it went from, $500 up to $50,000. And he said, until you've actually paid that amount, you don't have the right to charge for it. And that's standards. The standard is that, okay, I'm going to do this, therefore I'm going to demand it from the people around me. So if you want to work with high quality people, then you've got to set the highest quality of standards and stick to them.
Anything to add, Lloyd?
Absolutely. And I think that it shows across in your own life and in your business. And people will come to you if you are displaying those standards and you are showing that you're helping people to get, you need to keep people accountable by setting those standards and driving people to be there. But you need to set that result. You need to show that you have actually done that and you do that yourself. But to add to that, I always say that if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. Because I always like to surround myself with people that can add a lot more value to something than I can. And it's really important to always keep learning throughout life. So I think that's really important.
I think the upside to this, guys, is that a lot of this stuff doesn't work in isolation. It all works in unison. And as you get more momentum and you get more clarity around what's important to you, the kind of people you want to be doing business with, it does start to snowball. And that's going to allow you to set better standards. It's going to allow you to attract better clients. It's having that abundance mentality that you don't need 100% of any market share, whatever space you work in, to be highly successful.
Great points. And one of the first things that I did when I do a thing called the Change the Game program, and a lot of people go out and they say, well, my target market is anybody that does this, or my target market is everybody that does this, which means that opens up not only to the market, but it opens up to every possible competitor out there as well. And being a unique authority and niching right down, you can actually niche right down to a group of people that do this, whatever it is that you specifically want to attract, and that are already paying well for products and services that are similar to you. So the more refined you can get, a lot of people talk about refining their niche, the more refined that you can get and get clarity on the people that you want to work with and the absolute clarity on the outcomes and the values that you deliver, then you don't need the 100% of the market. A small percent of the right market will certainly keep you in business for a very, very long time.
I think a lot of people actually don't know what their target market is. And they just, like you say, Steve, they just say, it's everybody. You know, like my target's everybody who wants to buy property, but that's not really the case.
They don't know what they deliver. They only know what they do. And there's a massive difference when you get people to say, what are the outcomes that you deliver? And it's like, well, I'm an accountant. I just do books. Well, that's the biggest thing. That's one of the first things that we look at with people. What are the values and the outcomes that you deliver that is business changing or life changing for the people? Because that's what they actually pay for.
It's almost a case for people listening today that are probably having a few light bulb moments, Steve, and saying, oh, great. Well, you know, I haven't thought about that, or I am just an accountant, or I am just a solicitor, or whatever the case may be. It's a great opportunity to sort of rewrite the narrative and get clarity now around these things and obviously upskill, because being able to introspect, that's probably the starting point to be able to then go out into the world and you know, provide the best service or be the best person to your customers.
Yeah, one thing that we really should ban for people saying is just. I'm just this and I'm just that. And it's interesting that when I work with people, we get massive differences in results by changing their positioning and changing their offering to become a unique outcome-based offering. And we've done hundreds of thousands of dollars for people just by changing those two things. And once you change them, there's no real cost. Yet they would rather pay money for a Facebook hack or a Google hack or a YouTube hack and say, if all I could do was just pay this money, it's going to, you know, change my business. Whereas the real benefit and the change in the business is actually changing who they are and how they're perceived out there. I've got a saying, and I love alliteration, is your perceived positioning predicts your profits. When they get that right, then all the other marketing hacks and things like that, they can fall by the wayside. But the money, the real money, is changing their positioning and the packaging of what they do.
It's a great analogy you've used. And I think, you know, the Facebook, you know, if I can just spend some money here or spend some money, they're all quick fixes. Let's be honest. They're
and
just
most
quick
of the time
fixes.
They don't fix anything anyway.
They don't. They absolutely don't. Lloyd, in terms of work with Steve or history with Steve, has there been any things that you've been able to implement into your business?
You know, like I've worked with Steve where he's worked with me and my business to position ourselves, because obviously we deliver on an outcome for clients, which is based around lifestyle choices and equity creation. So Steve's helped me a little bit in that sense. And Steve actually runs a super group at the moment, which I'm still part of, which is essentially, I guess, some highly motivated business owners. Steve might elaborate a little bit on that because he has only a select few. I'm sure there's hundreds of people Steve's worked with, but he only has a few people in that group.
Yeah, the supergroup is like-minded professionals who want to work with each other and support and help each other. And we just meet online once a month, catch up with how our business is going, is there anything that we need, and who in particular that we can introduce us with, because there's only eight of us out there. And when you've got the access to eight other people's networks and mindsets, we can bring a problem and there's eight really good people working on it. And if we say we're looking for these sorts of people somewhere, or some other people in the group know people who know people. And that's the value of our super group, is basically, you know, as Napoleon Hill said, you know, having a mastermind or having the super group is very powerful. So we get together once a month and that's how we help and support each other.
And are there any key outcomes beyond obviously everybody trying to exponentially improve their business and personal lives? Are there specific things that you find that is a commonality amongst those in the group, or that you specifically work on them with?
I'm just the facilitator. I'm not the coach, the guru, or anything in there. I'm just one of these people who basically just organizes it and gets them in there. And it depends on who needs what at the time, because we've got people from different walks of life, but they're of the right mentality. They're of the abundance mentality of being, who could I help introduce you to? Or what is it that I know that I could share with you? And the outcomes are pretty well, I guess it's pretty well the same. Access to seven other great minds and access to seven other great people's networks.
I think that's the key, the network. So you got seven successful business owners, or eight successful business owners, including obviously Steve, who's running it, and then the networks behind that. That can include then getting access to people like accountants or financial planners or other types of entrepreneurs or all sorts of people.
Steve, in terms of business, I think a lot of people, when they're starting out, they're just focused on how to 10x. They're focusing on how getting from grassroots to what's 10 times that look like. What does the conversation look like for people that are already at that 10x stage and then going to the next level?
Well, if you've 10x, then you start again. What does 10x times that 10x look like? And everybody should always be looking to that next level. You know, whether it's size, monetary turnovers, there's different levels where different things are needed. And what got you to $2 million won't get you to 20. Those sorts of things and the different scaling that is required. But again, it still needs to have the clarity, the passion and the drive to be able to do that. And the practitioner that starts the business that got it to 10x is not going to be worthwhile when you're taking it from that 10x to the next 10x, because then they've got to take themselves off the tools to be the manager. And then they've got to be the next level, then the next level. They have to keep evolving. And that's one of the key things in all of this. It's not just, do I get better at what I do? And I think Houdini once said that you get good at what you do, then you get really good at two things, and that's sales and marketing. So anybody that's a practitioner that wants to spend more time becoming a better practitioner is not going to grow their business exponentially.
Thanks so much for your time today, Steve. I feel like we could probably the three of us speak for another few hours, but that brings us to the conclusion of the episode. Steve, thanks so much for joining us today in the studio.
Thanks for having me in, guys. It's been an absolute blast.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. It's been, I think all our listeners would have got a lot of inspiration out of that, and really enjoyed having you here.
Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in.